Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, the heart of the Clempire, with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times, and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. How are you? What's going on?
I'm good. It's man, I was gone since the last day I saw you for 2 weeks. Just got back last night.
Oh.
So it's
where did you go?
We were all through the Midwest, the Iguanas, doing a package tour, a co-bill tour with the great Sonny Landreth out there. Started off in Pittsburgh, played like Pittsburgh, Columbus, Ohio, Ann Arbor. Another small town, Three Oaks there, beautiful. Then went over to like Chicago, Evanston, all up in there. Finished off in Minneapolis a couple of nights ago, and then had a
And you were driving this?
Yeah, we were driving. Yeah, we had our van out there. You know, it's we had a full day's drive to get up there to start in Pittsburgh, and then we had a couple of days drive to get back. But on the way back, we wound up passing through the zone of eclipse, whatever, the complete eclipse.
Oh, so, what's that?
Well, that's the part of the country that kind of crisscrossed the United States where the sun would be supposedly completely blotted out by the moon.
So you had to drive with the lights on.
Well, you know, it never did actually. I mean, we didn't get to that part during the eclipse, so we saw a partial eclipse. But
did you have the glasses that you needed?
We did have some glasses, and we stopped for a second, pulled over, and looked at it. But you know, after I looked at it through the glasses, we only had one pair that we all looked through, and then I was looking at the glasses, and it says "Made in China."
Oh.
I'm thinking, well, I mean, have these glasses been vetted? Do we know that these are actually good? I mean, that China is our greatest geopolitical adversary, and you know, wouldn't it be? I know they make everything, but you know, if they were gonna make if they wanted to blind half of America, they just make the glasses a little bit faulty, and they'd go, "Oh, sorry, you know, we fucked up." But so I looked at it for a little bit, and I thought, "That's enough. I don't want to keep looking at this in case these things don't."
Yeah, I didn't see it. I had no interest in
right?
it at all.
Well, you know, there was.
I'll catch the next one.
Sure, 20 sure.
Years.
20 years.
Yeah,
well, you know, this time it seemed like the hype was extra big. You know, like they had all this. I don't remember.
Because that's the Chinese. They're hyping it up.
Huh? Yeah. Maybe so. Maybe with through social media. But
yeah.
I don't remember so much eclipse tourism the last time around. Like people actually, like, so on the way back down, we wanted to stay somewhere around Memphis on that first day. Now that was part of the zone of blackout. So even a day before we started calling, because we weren't sure exactly, you know, how it was going to pan out, we started calling. They were already all sold out, all the decent hotels. So a lot of people traveled, and we even saw, like, as we passed St. Louis, there was a 30-mile traffic jam of people who had gone out to the country and are somewhere else and had seen the eclipse and were now trying to get back into St. Louis.
Oh.
So, crazy.
Well, I remember the last one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the last one was pretty big because I remember, I guess it was about 8 years ago.
Yeah, I think so.
Jeff Treffinger's daughter was going with her partner or boyfriend or mm-hmm. friend to Kentucky or somewhere, to some campground, but she didn't have a pair of glasses. And I had just a week before gone to Warby Parker to look at some frames that I didn't really care for, but they were giving out tons of free eclipse glasses.
Oh, really?
So I took around 10 of them.
Oh, okay.
So my daughter was with Jeff's little daughter, and they were hanging out, and I think the daughter who was going to see the eclipse didn't have a pair of glasses, and my daughter said, "Well, my dad has a bunch of them."
Okay.
So Maria, the mom, texted me and says, "Do you have a pair of glasses that my daughter could have?" And I said, $300. So we haggled a little bit.
Yeah.
And I gave her a pair of glasses and stuff. And apparently she went and laid down on some field of grass and looked at it, but I don't get it. You know,
right?
I don't understand it. I don't care.
It happened in the 80s, right? Too.
Well, they have them all the time. They've had them throughout history.
Yeah.
Now,
I remember growing up in Lafayette. this kid, we were outside watching the eclipse, mm-hmm. and it was a perfect day to watch it. And you know, they make this thing where you can look through this film or whatever on a poster board, and this little Cajun kid, his dad was a welder, so he came with a welding hat.
Oh, well,
does that work?
Yeah.
It did work?
That's probably very protective,
yeah.
too.
He had a welding hat.
Yeah.
Right.
But I did notice, I did see that, you know, everyone around the world, newscasts were, you know, following it and stuff like that. And there was a Mexican television station in, just north of Mexico City. Well, their anchor people had like live footage of it. And I don't know, you can Google this because I saw it today. Apparently, during the footage of it, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I don't know where this camera was placed. I have no idea. They couldn't explain it either. But there was all of a sudden, for 3 seconds, a guy's testicles were there.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
It was hilarious. And those anchor people from Mexico were like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah. It was just all of a sudden you see these two testes right there hanging out really big and stuff. And I thought, well, that's funny.
The moon looks weird. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember the moon looking like that.
But, you know, I'm sure a lot of people got a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah. And
probably was more entertaining than the fucking eclipse was, right. You know?
Well, now, you know, the thing about the eclipse, like, you know, they get excited that the moon is blocking the sun, right?
Yeah, that's what happens.
But every night the Earth blocks the sun, right? And we don't get excited about that. I mean, it's dark. It's completely dark every night. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it. I'd much rather enjoy the darkness than the light, if you ask me.
Okay, but it doesn't get dark enough during the eclipse to really get anything going. Yeah,
I know. Nothing happened here because there was too many clouds and stuff.
Right,
we couldn't see a thing here. But apparently in the French Quarter, for a minute or two, the skies opened up and some people we know were actually able to see it for a few seconds.
Okay.
You know. Anyway, who cares?
Right.
Cares?
Well, so I was out there with this terrific band, Sonny Landreth. Now, I think we want to try to have him on the podcast sometime soon.
Wasn't he on the podcast?
No. He's never been on the podcast.
Is he dying or something?
No. He's in good shape. And Sonny's in his early
70s. How are you feeling? You all right?
I think so.
Okay.
So we have lost a few.
Yeah.
Not everybody's...
We've killed a couple.
Not everybody's made it over the long haul. But no, Sonny's...
He is a conga player.
No, he's a sly guitar player, has his own style of playing, does all this real intricate kind of...
Now, you were his band, or he has his own band?
No, brought his own band. He has these great guys. I love these guys. Dave Ranson is his bass player, who Sonny Landreth and Dave Ranson have been together playing since they're in middle school, like in 1969 or something. And, you know, Dave is salt of the earth. He's a great bass player.
Do they still like each other?
Yeah. They seem to get along great, man. And then they have this drummer, Brian Brignac, who I love the way that guy plays, man. He's great, plays very unorthodox, has a very individualistic style, you know. Great feel, does all this real kind of orchestral cymbal kind of stuff. And so that was a treat to be out there with those guys. And man, we had a whole bunch of sellouts, and the things that weren't sold out were totally filled. So it was a very successful campaign there. We got another one. We got 3 weeks here in New Orleans for the festival season. Then we go back out for a run of that same bill up the East Coast for about 2 weeks again, a little bit longer. Starting, May 10th or 11th or something. Everybody can, those are on all the social media, you can find those. Now, while I was gone, I saw an item in the New Orleans news about the mayor. and that she had started a podcast. Did you see that, Manny?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, yeah. So Mayor Cantrell, I guess she's
called Troubled Women.
Right. Troubled Women.
she's trying to avoid press conferences. She doesn't like the hard questions from the press. So I guess just like Nagin quit having press conferences his last couple of years and just started going on WBOK radio and talking once a week, I guess even that is she doesn't want that much exposure. So she started a Mayor Cantrell podcast, and then last week they had the first episode came out.
Oh.
And I'm looking on Instagram, and I see, we have a long time person we followed their career, came up, you brought her to our attention from seeing an advertisement on the side of her car. And so they're showing the panel of female business entrepreneurs who the mayor had on her first show, and one of them was the lady from the Vagiplug company standing right next to the mayor, and she's on her social media, she's thanking the mayor for including her and Vagiplug. So I guess City of New Orleans is getting behind Vagiplug.
Oh, okay. Well,
so for everybody who's not familiar with that, you can look it up.
I don't remember that.
Google it.
Okay.
And well, you brought this to our you remember the product, right? It was supposed to be like a health and wellness product that this woman was developing, and it's an actual plug that women are supposed to use to cut down on UTIs, or if you're taking a bubble bath, or
UTIs?
Urinary tract infection.
Oh, okay.
Or to keep debris out of the vagina, and we always thought our riff on it was like, is that something that's needed? I don't know. Women for hundreds of thousands of years, it seems to have
worked. Wasn't cock the original plug?
Sure.
That should be the original plug.
This thing kind of looks like it might be a sex kind of toy, but it's not.
Does
really
it have batteries? That's
well, it
the thing
doesn't.
We need to
ask. Solar power.
It has solar power.
Solar
right,
power.
Right. But this is like a church lady, So I've always wondered, is this like she's trying to sneak this into under the wire, Like this, all you church ladies can pretend that this is a health thing, but it's really a sex
toy.
Now,
did you listen to this podcast?
I haven't listened to it yet.
Okay.
No, I haven't heard it.
And it's called LaToya?
Well, it's something. I'm not sure exactly what. We'd have to look that up, but probably if we Googled LaToya Cantrell podcast, it would.
So LaToya endorses the vag plug.
Well, we got to listen to the podcast and see how much they get into it. But she certainly had the woman on and gave her a platform there to pitch her product. So, all right, I can see the mayor's getting proactive here. I like.
Well,
it.
Well, she only has about 9 months left in office.
Yeah.
So she's got to. I'm sure she's getting something for the plug. I don't know.
Well, so she's promoting the Vagiplug, but we still today had inability to pump any water out of the city to where Broad Street, the main thoroughfare, was completely impassable right by your neighborhood, man.
It can fill up a vagina, but not a pothole.
By the Zulu Club.
Yeah,
and Broad Theater. It always floods there.
Yeah, man. I had to circumnavigate it to get to my my second rehearsal, rather.
Yeah, that area sucks, but they deserve it. Those fucking people at Zulu, man, they think they own that place. So,
well,
it's good that they get flooded every once in a while.
No, it wasn't good for me.
It's not always about you, Renee, or is it?
Well,
it is always about you.
Well, it's each of us is living our own our own.
Yeah, you don't
movie.
Have to live there when they're having their little fundraisers and campaigns when they block off the whole entire intersection so you can't get through, and they walk like they're fucking. They walk across the street like they're fucking the higher Krishnas that don't hear things,
Well, they have been there a long time, but I have seen that. But yeah, I can see where that's an inconvenience.
Yeah, it's
to
an
people that live in the neighborhood. No, I don't live in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I feel bad for the neighbors in that. Like the Broad Theater has to deal with the flooding. They got flooded big time today.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So the theater did?
Well, I'm sure they
well,
did.
The, I'm
they
sure
always
that room,
take. They always take in water.
Oh. Yeah. It was deep over there.
You know, because, but where I'm at, I'm actually one of the few neighborhoods in the city that's above sea level.
Oh.
You know, which is kind of good.
Yeah.
So I just laugh. You know.
Well, but that's so close to your house, though, even though it's.
Yeah, it's very close. It's not on the ridge. Ridge. That's
right, I guess all the water drains off the ridge into that low spot there.
Yeah, so, yeah, they had a lot of water today, you know, but what are you
going
to do?
Right. Well, what's going on with you, Manny? What did I miss?
While you were gone, your buddy, your idol, Bob Dylan was in town.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, on April Fool's Day.
Okay.
You know, and I thought that was, really?
He is a trickster.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you had said, and he's still doing the same tour he's been doing for like 3 years.
Right, rough and rowdy ways.
I don't understand that. But anyway, my wife and I actually got a couple of comp tickets to go see him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we went, and, you know, over the years, I've made fun of him and stuff like that, because I've seen him drool while he's singing and stuff like that.
Sure.
And you've defended him like he's family and stuff like that. And I got to tell you, though, we went to this show at the Sanger.
Mm-hmm.
We went to this show, and my wife was excited about it. And I got to tell you, Renee, I you defended him, and I guess I put him down a lot or whatever, but it had to be one of the worst shows I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, well, one of the worst shows ever.
I've heard plenty of people who are huge fans say the same thing about particular Dylan shows. Yeah, he can definitely be a hit and miss, man.
Yeah, and he was wearing these fancy shoes like he like in his 30s.
He's a sharp dresser,
like
man.
You know, but I couldn't understand a fucking word he was saying.
Right.
You know, and even between songs, when he tried to talk to the audience, people were like, huh? What?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, it was by 9 o'clock, everyone was leaving.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the show started at 8:45. You know? You know? So, yeah, it was awful.
Right.
It was an awful show.
We didn't go this time, even though I...
Well, you were on tour,
Even before I realized that I was going to be on tour, Tana asked, should we get tickets? And I was like, nah, we saw this tour a couple of years ago. We don't need to go.
Real quick, did you hear the story about Tony Hall and Willie Green from the Neville Brothers recording with Bob Dylan?
I have heard stories, but one? Go ahead.
Daniel Lanois was producing it.
Right.
And I think Mark Howard and Daniel Lanois and
Malcolm Byrne.
And they didn't know who really bought. They knew of the name, but they they just hired, Lanois hired him. So they're like right over there that they made this big house into a studio, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then... they're recording and Bob Dylan's not staying enough and he has his
hoodie.
Yeah, hoodie on and he's like in the corner. And finally he comes in the room and it's like he's just quiet and he turns around to Willie and Tony and he's like, What do y'all think of this song? And Willie he was just ready to get out of there. He's like, yeah, it's cool, man. And Tony Hall goes, bro, it's cool, but your verses be too long. Your verses be too long.
Yeah.
And well, then, Lanois turned around and goes, dude, it's Bob Dylan.
people have been telling Dylan that for a long time. Yeah. He wasn't gonna change what he was doing.
Yeah, right.
So you didn't like that, but it's not for everybody.
I'm just happy I didn't have to pay.
At least it lasted 15 minutes.
Minutes. I didn't see him drool.
All right.
But he was wearing his diapers over his pants.
Okay, well, I wasn't expecting that.
So
but
that's
it's not a good sign.
A good sign at all, But, so it was all right. But that's a nice theater, though. It is a nice theater. So
It is nice theater. Now, I got one complaint with it. If you have the really good seats where you're kind of in the middle towards the front, it sounds terrible.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
If you're further back where you can... Because for some reason, they don't have, like, center fill speakers at the Sanger, you know? So all you hear is kind of stage wash coming off the stage in the middle.
Right.
And so the better your seats are, the worse the sound is there. Anyway, do better. Come on.
Yeah.
Get it together, Sanger Theater. Now, speaking of performances, did you happen to catch the Roadhouse remake movie that just came out. We had Cece Adcock was on.
Is it out? I didn't
was
know
talking
it was
about.
Out.
Yeah, yeah. Came
is
out,
it
on,
out on
some the, Amazon Prime.
Oh, on yeah, Amazon yeah, Prime.
Straight to streaming.
Well, you know, it's just like why remake a classic?
Right.
You know. It's
right.
Like, why did they remake Psycho? You know,
well, it's because, as you always point out, they can't come up with any new ideas.
Yeah,
you know,
so they
think,
know,
well, we'll.
I don't know. I'll see it. I'll go look for it because Cece's in it. But
right.
other
well,
than that, what's his name? Spider-Man is Patrick Swayze's character.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah,
right,
Spider-Man.
Right. One of the Spider-Men. Yeah.
So,
and Conor McGregor, and he's all roided up and has a lot of plastic surgery, obviously. And but, you know, Tom
now,
McClane shows
up. Who plays the female lead, the love interest?
I don't know her name. It's not anybody I recognized.
Because I'll, you know, cause I have a feeling it'll be a lot more nudity than the original one.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that.
Oh, you didn't see
it?
So you saw the movie
I
already.
Saw it, yeah.
Now, Cece plays Blind Melon Camp, right?
Well,
he plays a guitar player,
he
gets
plays,
glass
but,
thrown in his eyes.
The story doesn't track exactly scene for scene, beat for beat.
Now, who plays the Sam Elliott character?
As I said, I don't.
Will
think,
Ferrell.
Yeah, no, it's the characters aren't so directly. The story's not that strict to the original, so it has the general arc of it.
But who plays the Ben Gazzara character?
That's what I say. It's somebody I don't even know. It's not an older guy.
So CeCe's Jeff Healey.
Yeah, Cece, but there's a bunch of different people that have stage times. They use several different acts, but Cece has the big scene during the bar fight, the bar fight that turns into a knife fight, that you know how it goes,
yeah.
Manny. They still have one of those, but it's almost where they it was over the top in the first place, and then when they had the remake, they kind of parodied something going over
sure.
the top. It looked like a Western movie where somebody throws one punch and then everybody in the bar just starts fighting with
right.
the person right next to him, you know? so, but Cece is there behind the chicken wire while all that's going on. The band
is
keeps...
Is Bob Dylan in it?
Bob Dylan's not in it that I could see. Maybe he was fighting in one of the back corners. He wasn't credited. But Cece is there. Jason Burns, his bass player, is there. Tommy McLean's there playing some maracas on stage.
Tommy's probably seen that kind of shit in real life.
Oh, I bet he has, man. I bet he's played behind plenty of plenty of chicken wire before.
Oh, yeah.
Well, got anything else, Manny? Because we're going long here. We should get our guests in.
One more thing. You know, the basketball Final Fours happened. I don't know if you're interested in that. But I loved it. I really liked the women's Final March Madness. I thought it was... amazing entertainment, just amazing. But what I thought was really weird is because it was getting more pub than the men's, because it was just more interesting, really.
Yeah, I had that one player who's
well,
like
yeah,
a superstar.
Yeah, the one player. They had all these factors that were coming in, but then all of a sudden the press started like towards the championship game. You saw more and more of these women stars acting out, like they were complaining to the refs, they were screaming, they were getting technical fouls and stuff, and they were at their press conferences complaining and stuff like. And the coaches were complaining; these female coaches were complaining. And then I had to tweet, I put it out there. I said, "Well, they're all on their periods, you know. That's why it's going
all
on.
Synced
they're
up.
All bleeding while playing, you know.
Yeah, they've been around each other for a long time.
Yeah, you know, those napkins can only do so much.
Makes it tough, man.
Yeah, you know. So I just thought, what's the big hullabaloo with all them? They're women.
Yeah.
You know, they're like the group of yammering bitches that we know. You know, it's just like all those women, man.
Well,
you know, it's like I don't know. Anyway, that's just I just had to get that out.
Sure, get it all out.
Yeah, because you know the women are smarter though. I'll give them that. They're smarter than men. But anyway, so yeah, let's introduce our guests.
Okay.
Let's get this over with.
All right. That's the spirit. Okay, well, this is a guest. He's one of our few returning guests that we've had so far.
He hasn't died.
Right, well, that's why he's returning.
Yet.
He's not returning from the grave.
Yeah.
But he was actually the last guest that we had...
World.
that we record in person before COVID struck, and show came out on March 19th, 2020. I think we must have recorded it like on, you know, March 10th or something. And, of course,
COVID,
everything shut
COVID
down.
Happened. Oh,
everything and when that happened, I swore I'd never come back on this thing.
you somehow thought that we had caused COVID.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a correlation there, causal relation. So anyway, he's back. He's a first call master drummer, recording session go-to drummer. He's played on over 200 records. He spent 10 years. 500 records, played on over 500 records. Wow, crazy. He's a busy boy. He spent over 10 years touring with Jerry Douglas. He's played with all kind of people, Larry Carlton, Eric Clapton, Joe Sample, John Oates, Colonel Bruce Hampton, Willie Nelson, Dr. John, Sonny Landreth, Jazz Crusaders, Tommy McLean, Bobby Rush, on and on and on, John Mooney, Lynn Drury, two records we did together.
Right.
He's also a composer with two solo records out. His most recent is Magazine Street, came out a couple of years ago. His latest project that he's finishing, he was talked about it on the first episode, which was episode 98, back there in March 19th, 2020. Talked about his film project that he'd been working on for a number of years, and I guess it's just been completed. It's a film about New Orleans drummers and the New Orleans drumming tradition, the street beat, and so it's called Street Beat, Drumming Below Sea Level. And it's just been completed, and I guess it's going to be released soon. And we're going to hear about all that. But without further ado, the great Mr. Doug Belote. Welcome, Doug.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, man.
Manny, Renee, thank
you. Yeah, great.
So Doug, you know, how has your life changed for the better since you were on the Troubled Men podcast the first time?
I guess it's the same. No, it's great. I mean, it's... Life's right just every
you
day.
Haven't died.
That's, not yet. Yeah.
And we've lost a few comrades along the way since then.
Actually,
I think we lost Kevin O'Day. Kevin. We lost Carlo.
And then Russell Batiste.
We lost Russell Batiste.
All in like a year and a half.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, and Kevin and Russell, young men that we, you know, it's like we were not expecting that.
Yeah, that was just, Kevin was 48. He'd be about 51 right now. It was a couple of years ago. But
right.
Yeah, it's just, that was... All of those were unexpected, you know, for me, you know.
Sure, yeah, for all of us.
You think, you know, yeah.
Now, so the street beat New Orleans, or rather, Drumming Below Sea Level. For that, you have you went to many of the top New Orleans drummers, guys like, you know, Johnny Vodakovich, Ricky Sebastian, Carlo. You had all these people talking about where the tradition comes from. How did you get involved in this project?
Well, I'm doing it with a friend of mine, a producer named Mr. Donnie Markowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And Donnie Markowitz is from New York City and lived in L.A. for years. He wrote the song "I've Had the Time of My Life."
You know? Oh, okay.
So he from
Dirty Dancing. Yeah. Must have made some dough off that.
I'm pretty sure. But he moved here and he produces like commercials and does music. That's how I met him. And one day he and myself and Jason Verlamoret, who Jason's a movie producer, like a film producer, a cinema photographer,
mm-hmm.
has a Fire on the Bayou Productions.
Okay.
He does a lot of the video stuff for like all the commercials in Tom Moore's Bard, Blue Runner, you know, Zatarain's.
Right, right.
He does all the film work for that. And then Mickey Hart started by the name of, her name is Rhea Hart. She lives here in town.
Rhea Sunshine.
Yeah, Rhea Sunshine. Yeah,
I know Rhea.
And so all four of us had a meeting 8 years ago, March 1st of 2016. And me and Donnie had talked about it. And then everybody just, you know, agreed to do this thing. And 8 years later, we finally pretty much got it done.
Right. Well, it turned out beautiful, man.
Oh, thanks.
It looks great. The cinematography is great. The sound is great. Editing is fantastic. It looks so slick and well done, man.
Yeah, it was like 2.5 hours long. We got it down to right under an hour. You know?
Right.
That's hard, but...
So that's y'all were trying to cut it...
Yeah, just so we just don't bore anybody.
Right, right.
You know?
So do you have an idea of where you know, where you want it to land, what the end, like,
yeah,
you know,
we still
put it on streaming service.
We're not sure yet. Okay. I mean, Donnie's working on that with the attorney, and that's something he has different ideas, but we're trying to figure it out, you know.
Sure.
But we're doing a screening of it during Jazz Fest.
Okay, where's that?
I think it's supposed to be at the Mint, the New Orleans,
Jazz Museum.
Jazz Museum. Mm-hmm. And at 1 o'clock on May 6th,
okay.
You know, it's like limited seating, but
right.
But we're trying to do it there, and yeah, it's just, you know, just trying to keep the style of this, the correct style of this drumming out. That's why I got handpicked each individual drummer at different ages, and you know, I had this idea a long time ago when Herman Ernest and Bunchy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of guys, you know, Smokey Johnson, when they were still alive, and
right.
I never did it. Then when Donnie brought it up to my attention again, we decided to do it.
Let me do it before anybody else dies.
I mean, you know, sure. Like I said, I didn't get Kevin O'Day in it because I didn't know Kevin before I moved here. But we, even though we went to the same high school at the same time,
yeah,
you know, I didn't even know him. But it's basically just all the New Orleans drummers that. Like when I grew up, like CC Adcock and everybody growing, and they were all my older, you know, friends. And
mm-hmm.
They would always tell me about each of these drummers, and you know, so I just studied it and moved here, and then from like heroes to peers, you know,
right
kind of thing.
Right.
So what's the difference between a New Orleans drummer and say a Chicago drummer?
About $40. Well, there's a difference. You know, New Orleans has their own style of music, like the second line. Plus, I'm going to say South Louisiana in general. You have New Orleans funk. You have New Orleans R&B. You have second line brass band music. You have Zydeco, Cajun, blues, R&B, and Chicago's mostly like a blues, you know, town and stuff. But there is a difference.
But can't a drummer from Chicago play New Orleans drumming?
If he moved down here for a while,
yeah,
know,
okay.
Maybe he minced himself and
like in the movie, people talk about guys who don't live here but who have studied the form.
Yeah.
Say, you know, these guys that grew up here in this from the time they're 2 and 3 years old in the street. There's no way you can replicate that kind of exposure and that kind of richness of. And in your movie, you have a lot of the older guys talking about where they got it from, and then younger guys, as you pointed out, talking about where they got it from, and the people that are still around that they look to.
And then we still pay homage to people that had passed, like James Black,
right.
Smokey Johnson, Earl Palmer. You know, Earl Palmer was from here. He was the original rock and roll drummer.
Right.
You know, he was the first guy to do all the Fats Domino, Little Richard records and stuff. And he went to L.A. with that beat. And that's when he started playing on Cher's records. And
right. Played on everything.
Beach Boys.
But always had that swinging New Orleans feel underneath it all.
Thing.
You know, that kind of... Yeah. And they Carlo talks about it. Some different people talk about, like... Jason Marcellus talks it a little bit. It's not a straight shuffle. It's not straight eighths. It's in between there.
It's in between.
And there's all these shades of where, how close it gets to a straight eighth note, how close it gets to a dotted eighth, 16th figure.
And you've had Carlo Nuzzi on this podcast, right?
Yeah, several times.
Yeah, and you know, that's like one of the like main people to talk about in this, because like he was a master at taking that kind of you know, like a straight pop beat and can make it swing.
He was also a master of borrowing money and never paying it back.
Yeah.
You know, owes me $80 still.
Oh, yeah, you're never gonna get that money.
Oh yeah,
I'm out. I'll try his wife.
Yeah. See, I don't know.
Yeah, what's her name?
Let's leave her out of this.
I don't know what her name. Esmeralda, I think that's her name. I don't know what her name. She's a nice lady.
She's a sweetheart.
She might give me the $80, you know.
Yeah, but don't ask her for it.
I would say take his drums, but they weren't worth shit either.
Yeah, probably not worth shit either. What am I going to do with them?
I mean,
right.
That's the cool thing about Carlo. He could play on a piece of shit drum set and make it sound like $1 million.
Well,
you know?
Well, I like,
because he probably did many times, because he sold his real drum set.
Well, it's funny because of James Black. James Singleton has the floor tom of James Black,
that he cocked.
He banged on James' door. He goes, James, I need $40. And I was like,
oh,
he goes, what, man, I'm sleeping. He goes, here, I'll give you this floor tom. I just got it from Ludwig or something. And I was like, and it's a big 18-inch floor tom. It's still at James' house, just like sitting on the shelf.
Yeah.
Every time I go there, he looks at it and goes, yeah, I gave James $40 for that back in like 1984 or something. And never got the money back.
Right. Well,
you know.
Yeah, that is part of James Black's profile, kind of, unfortunately. Well, you know, one of the things about the movie is you get the feeling that, well, back to Carlo for a second. You have a story where Stanton Moore is going to Carlo during Stanton's early, you know, student days, and he's just going, and he's such a sponge. He's asking everybody any little piece of information he can pick up off of anybody. He asks Carlo, "Hey man, how do you have the bass drum tuned?" And Carlo goes, "I don't know, man. Go look at it. It's right there. I don't know. I don't know what I did to it." So
Carlo didn't give a shit about anything. When Stanton was trying to get in with him, he's like, "Hey man, I'm Stanton Moore. I study with Johnny Vidakovich," and Carlo, like, you know, Stan puts his hand out, and Carlo don't even shake his hand. He goes, "I'm sorry."
Jesus. Nice guy.
Yeah. He had his moments for sure. But one of the feelings that really comes across is how, you know, within this drumming, you know, community, you guys talking about this, it doesn't feel like there's any competition, you know? It's like everybody feels like we're all carrying this tradition along and trying to share it and you know.
I've never felt any competition with any drummer here. Like, everybody wants everybody to sit in. This is the only town that I've ever lived in where you walk into a gig and somebody sees you and is like, "Hey, come sit in." Like Russell Batty's one of the best drummers ever to touch a drumstick. He never made me feel like I couldn't play or anything. He just always was supportive, and you know, just like he would just come here, man, sit in, and you know, and which is funny because I remember a story about this place here. We came in here, me and Russell once, to buy something, and I remember he goes
Flocka,
he goes, "Man, I got to take a shit," and he's like.
In this place?
No. So he was at we had somebody's house right down the street. So he made his girlfriend come here to Snake Jason steal the toilet paper to go back to bring it.
That's a lovely story. Yeah.
I had so many stories about this place.
Like that.
Oh, I remember you now, man. You're the one whose dad used to bring him down here when you were a kid, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, now I remember you.
Let's actually get back into that. Let's get back into some. We usually start with some background information on the guests, and I have skipped over that here. So you didn't grow up in New Orleans. You grew up close by. So tell us about where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And your father was a session bass player,
Yep. Yeah, he played a lot of the Cajun and swamp hop hits down there, and
he was the bass player on Sea of Love, right?
Yeah, he played on that. He played on played with Tommy McLean, just everybody in Lafayette, and you know, like if you had that swamp hop, you know, that it's popular music back there, and
right,
Cajun music and stuff, and like Manny said, he would take me here as a kid, but at 13 I saw Johnny Vidakovich, which is why I did this movie, because I saw Johnny at 13 when he took me to see Johnny. And I saw Johnny play, and I was like, that changed my life. I'm like, well, and then I ended up meeting Herman Ernest, you know, and Herman Ernest.
And you went to an all-black high school?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's where you got the funk in you,
that's
right?
That's where I started playing.
Yeah, exactly. Now I remember you.
Yeah, I didn't, because it's weird where my street was.
Yeah,
every kid went there.
Parish line. You were on the parish line.
Yeah, and I had to go, which was a blessing, because that's how I got into drums, like, rhythm and stuff, you know, like.
And that's how you got into black women too, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
I'll bet.
Yeah, I bet, man.
All right. So as a teenager, your dad had you. I'm sure you're probably like sleeping on the side while he was doing sessions,
He was actually
And even though y'all didn't have a lot of money, he found a drum kit for you.
Yeah, my first drum kit was at a auction. The state auction for $12.50.
$12.50 drum kit.
And I remember I traded a skateboard for a ride cymbal to this rich white kid in Lafayette that he had a drum set. His parents would buy him anything. but he couldn't play, and he was really into. He wanted this skateboard I had because it was discontinued. And I remember my dad goes, "Yeah, give him that skateboard. Tell me what that Zildjian rod symbol."
Yeah, it's like a $300 symbol.
And he's like, "Okay." So I had that, and then I had put a motorcycle helmet for a hi-hat symbol until I can, you know, afford some. But yes, that's how it all started. And then, like I said, my dad took me to see, you know, Johnny Vodakovich and Herman Ernest.
Right. And, Herman. And we just heard Herman. We were sitting here in the bar, and LaBelle came on, Lady Marmalade. Yeah. He's the drummer on that.
Because, you know, y'all used to play, like, you know, in Lafayette, you had, what was it called? Downtown Alive every Friday evening.
Right.
Iguanas played there.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
A lot of New Orleans bands would play there. Shermaine Neville would come. I met Raymond Weber, you know. Dr. John came or would play Grand Street. I met Herman Ernest. I met Russell at, you know, Jelly Bean, everybody. But Johnny was the first drummer, New Orleans drummer, I actually saw live, you know.
Nice, and, nice. Well, it seems like a good little time to take a break, huh, Manny?
Yeah, sure. I got to pee like the Cooley Dam, so I don't take a break. We'll be right back.
We're back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Komen, back with our guest, Mr. Doug Belote. Now, Doug, I know you're a longtime listener to the show, so you're aware that we're operating as a listener-supported operation these days. We have Venmo and PayPal links in the show notes of every show, and we have devoted listeners who support us periodically. Some of them, they'll buy us a few cocktails now and then. And man, I tell you, going out there across the country, going playing all these gigs, a lot of love for the Troubled Men podcast out there in the hinterland.
Oh, really?
A lot of people come up to me at gigs and say, "Man, I love the podcast." That Manny Chevrolet, he's something else, boy. I love it. So you got fans out there, Manny.
I mean, that's the best name in New Orleans, right there.
It's a great name. It was worth winning it in the card game. We also have a Patreon page where we have patrons who support us week in and week out, a handful of patrons, but they're always there week in and week out. And the Patreon link is there in the show notes as well. And also we have the Troubled Men Podcast t-shirts. The link is there, and many popular sizes, all of the popular sizes, men and women, many colors. Also follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook. Subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Costs you nothing. Helps us a lot. Look out for the Iguanas and all the bands I play with during French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest coming up. And then those Iguanas dates with Sonny Landreth, the end of May there, middle of May. You can find those at iguanas.com. And, you know, Renee Komen social media has all my dates on it. Well,
when is French Quarter Fest?
French Quarter Fest starts tomorrow.
Oh,
I'm playing it tomorrow at okay. noon. Yeah. And look, I broke a filling on my first day off on this tour, so I have a huge hole in the side of my tooth that I have to go and get a filling at 8 a.m. tomorrow, and then I have my first set at noon. So I know I'm going to feel like $1 million when I'm.
Who's that with?
Paul Sanchez.
Oh,
yeah. So,
Paul Sanchez.
Yeah, I'm playing with Paul
You're
tomorrow.
Playing
with Paul Sanchez.
Stop the press.
Me and Doug Garrison, rhythm yeah. section for the rhythm section for Alex Chilton, rhythm section for the Iguanas, rhythm section for
John Mooney.
Well,
he called me and I said, call the other Doug.
Oh.
Because I couldn't get
it. Well, they booked Lynn and John Mooney at the exact same time, even though I've been playing in both of those bands for like almost 10 years in John's case. And you know John how he is with the with the details. You know, a month ago when I saw that both of these gigs were on the same day, I knew when Lynn's gig was. I started saying, John, when is your set? Oh, I gotta find out. And it's like, well, you should know already. Everybody else does. Oh, I'm gonna find out. So he finally told me about 6 days ago, and I said, well, that's the exact same time where.
Oh yeah, he called me the other day, and he says, I said, John, I can't do that because I get off at 1:30 or whatever.
Oh, no,
and,
I was.
And
I was,
he goes, and he goes, and I said, your set starts at 1:30. He goes, well, me back in.
You can play for a while. I'll
just
do
play,
a few without you.
Yeah, a few. I was like, man,
right,
I don't know, man.
No, I was on the other end of all those text calls.
I told him, I said, just call the other Doug.
Anyway, so I'm not playing that gig. I should be playing that on Sunday. It's one less gig I'm playing, but I am going to be super busy.
That's good.
Yeah. And what else? Something else I'm missing out on. Well, you know, we got to look for your film coming up, and you just mentioned we'll put the link to that premiere in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a screening, not a premiere.
Screening. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Words are important.
I was told to change it to a screening.
Okay. That's right. Not a premiere. Okay. Enough of that. Back to our guest, the great Mr. Doug Belote. So Doug, you fall into this love of New Orleans music, Johnny Vodakovich. You start studying. You wind up going up to. I knew this before, but I was reminded of it. You sold all of your possessions and went up to New York to study with Ricky Sebastian, who, oddly enough, is from Lafayette.
Yeah,
and he's also in your film.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
And. You know, Ricky, what a master, quiet, you know, but such a accomplished guy, man.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great teacher, and just, you know, went to New York, played with Jocko and Herbie Mann and all kind of people. And
well, you know, he played in my father's band when he first got to New Orleans.
Man, that's great. Really?
Yeah. So he came to New Orleans.
So did I. Man, that's crazy.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of people went through my father's band, man. So he came here at the same time as like Scott Gudo, and there was a saxophone player who came from, I can't remember what his name was.
Carl Landry, maybe?
No. But like kind of a Spanish name or something. But
Turd Ferguson.
No, wasn't that? That's close.
Poop Henderson.
Okay. We're getting far. We're getting cold now. But anyway, so yeah, I've known John Ricky since I'm, you know, like, I don't know, 12 years old or something.
Wow.
I'd like to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, he'd love it. He'd be great, man.
But what were we talking about? Oh, okay. Well, so you go up to New York and then you come back to New Orleans as like a complete drummer. You know, you wind up being someone who can play all the street shit. You can also read your ass off. You can play straight ahead jazz. And I remember, you know, playing some gig with you, and I think it was kind of a swing gig or something. And then we played a country tune, and I was like, man, how do you fucking learn to play country music like this? And you said, oh, my dad's a country bass player. I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. So you have all the pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
So, you know, you wind up being like the
I'm a
first
jack off of all trades.
Okay, well. first.
So what happened?
Yeah, what happened to you? We had so much hope.
Yeah.
We had such high hopes for you, Doug.
Yeah.
No, well, so you know, you play on all these Nashville sessions, all these New Orleans sessions. Every time you look at your Instagram, it's session drummer, hashtag session drummer. You know,
I try.
And you actually, through that, are friend, are kind of friends with a guy that we had on subsequent to you, a guy that played in Manny's band, Matt Tekew. Remember that guy?
Oh, I know Matt Tekew.
Yeah, yeah.
He played in your band?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
For a short period of time.
I played in his band.
Okay, well.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know you guys knew each other.
So. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I keep in touch with Matt all the time. Oh, he's great.
He's great.
Yeah.
And great. Matt is a guy.
I love that guy.
We had him on the podcast. Did you listen to
this? I didn't know that. No, I'm going to listen to it tonight, though. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he talks about how he was at a boarding school. And he took some LSD and broke into the band room and got behind the drum set and realized that he could play drums without ever having been on a drum kit.
That's amazing. I met him on a cruise ship. I was with John Cleary on the blues cruise.
Yeah, I think that's what he said. Yeah,
I met him, and I'm like watching him play. He's this big, tall guy. And
yeah,
I remember
really
it was hot.
Tall.
He took his shirt off, and he got like, he's like chiseled.
Good-looking guy. Yeah,
yeah, chiseled,
handsome.
Tall, and very handsome. Mm-hmm. And he's playing the drums. Man, I swear, his time is fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Because he's still on acid.
I told him, I went up to him and said, dude, you're a human metronome. And then he came, watched me play with Cleary, and we've been, you know, friends ever since.
Right.
Well, he said also, I think if I remember, that when he was at that boarding school and he broke into the music room and he took some acid, and he was, what, 16 or something?
Yeah, something like that.
And somebody heard him playing and said, hey, you want to join my band?
Yeah. I said, can you make a session next week? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
He did a recording session like within a week of his first time he ever sat behind a drum kit.
He's a natural, man. He's,
And he plays so natural, the same kind of way that you play, like when... You know, you think, oh, this person is a first call drummer. When they sit behind the kit, we're going to be amazed. And to a normal street person, they would go, well, what is this guy doing? Well, I don't know. He just looks like he's just playing. It's like, well, but the way he's doing it, it's not just what he's doing. It's what he's not doing.
Yeah.
It's all the space he's leaving. And, for instance, you and I did this session with Lynn Drury at Dockside.
Yeah.
And that was a magical session.
It was.
That was the first time I'd ever been to Dockside. And I'd always heard about that recording studio out in, you know, outside of Lafayette.
Yeah.
Not even in Lafayette.
Yeah.
It's in the country of Lafayette.
Maurice, Louisiana.
Shout out to Steve Nails. So Tony Daigle, who was the road manager on Sonny Landreth.
Yeah, he did my first session that Herman Ernest got me on.
Tony Daigle, he's road managing Sonny and guitar teching for Sonny, but he built Dockside Studio and was the engineer, like Grammy winning engineer and producer on a ton of sessions the first, I don't know, 10 years they were there or something.
Yeah. It's crazy. When I was in high school, I would go there and watch Herman Ernest and people record there. And Scott Billington or John Snyder or somebody would be producing. Mm-hmm. And I'd go watch, you know. And I remember, I think it was Junior Wells. I was over there watching Herman Ernest play. And Herman Ernest... like starts packing up, and producer's like, hey, where are you going? He goes, we have another song. He goes, I gotta go, man. I told you I have a gig at Tipitina's with, you know, Dr. John tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta go to sound check. I'm going straight. He goes, man, we got one more song. And Herman's like, dude, I told you I gotta be out of here. And he just looks, he goes, man, that little dude can play right there. He goes, man, just give him a shot. And the guy's like, producer looks at me, looks back, and goes, man, come on, man, get back up on the drums. He's like, man, he goes, I gotta go. He goes, we'll probably do it acoustically. And finally, like, and the guy, I forgot the producer, maybe it was John Snyder, I can't remember. He's like looking at me going, get on the kit. and then Tony Daigle was the guy that came around and told me, he goes, have you played on a session before? I said, no. I said, but I've watched my dad and I watched. Uh-huh. He goes, look, just, you turn the bass up here, just the bass.
He showed you how to run
headphone click. Uh-huh. And he goes, this is a click track. You know what a click track is? I said, no. He goes, it's a metronome. I said, oh, I high school, our band director, bangs on the metronome, so we have to play. He goes, and Tony told me, he goes, just pretend it's somebody playing a cowbell next to you. Like, y'all just trying to groove. Nice. And that's what we did, and that was my first, like, real session on a label.
Wow, man.
And I was, like, probably... 17 years old, and it was because of Herman and because of Tony.
Nice.
Tony was the one who actually
calm me down and show me how to play with a click. He goes, "Look, it's easy. Nobody's watching you. It's gonna be fun. Just play."
What
just
a
play.
Guy, man! Yeah, what a guy! What a great thing to do to a young musician, man!
And man, I was like, he just made it so easy for me that that's what I wanted to do. You know, it's like,
man,
and it's
guys
more fun.
Like, guys like that that have, you know, they could be dickheads, but they're not.
Yeah, and that guy, that's one of the best engineers you ever find.
I love
fast. I mean, I saw that guy cut tape with razor blade.
Yeah, in the old days. Yeah, we were cutting 24 track tape.
And that session I did was in the tape days, so there was no Pro Tools or ADAT.
Yeah.
And shit, and it was just like, you know.
Well, it's like you like myself came up in the days where it wasn't, you know, you didn't get a million passes at something.
No, you got to nail it.
You got to stand up there and in front of the microphone, be an adult, and do something that's going to stick to the tape.
Right.
And so you and I get on this Lynn Drury session. Lynn is somebody who has her shit together. You know, she does a perfect take the first time.
Yeah, she's,
you know, she's
every vocal I thought she did was. And, more than perfect.
And all the vocals on the record are all first take vocals. It's all the shit that she did live with us.
Yeah.
All of her guitar playing. But on that session, we would do like two takes, and you'd look at me and you'd go like, "That was good for you, huh? That was good for me. That was a great one. That's great, right?" And you go, "Oh yeah, we're good, man. If you guys need to do another one, just record to the rhythm section."
I always do the same thing. They go, "What do y'all feel about that? Should we do another one?" It's like, "Well, I always say, well, I'm gonna do the same thing I just did.
It's just not gonna be as good because I'm gonna lose."
I always tell my first and second takes are the best.
Right.
After that, when I start knowing the song too good, then. You know,
well, and it worked because you not only were you right, but it kept us with momentum, moving forward, cutting more tracks. That's where we were able to make a record in 3 days.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's actually 2 days, but yeah.
Yeah. There's some drinking involved. Slowed us down slightly, but.
And what's her name? Was there a Yokomo? I mean, Yoko, the Cajun Yoko. The Cajun Yoko, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah. Oh, no, we had some other, a peanut gallery there at one point that started to offer some advice, some non-musicians offering advice. It's kind of one of my standard quips.
You want to see Rene get pissed off.
It's like, okay, Yoko, thanks. Thanks for the advice. Now, something I noticed that you, particularly in that session, that you're so great at is, like, you have, I don't know if you think about it ahead of time or just is innate, but you can sense where all the transitions as a band goes from one section of the song to the other. Like, you know, bands have a tendency to speed up or slow down or something, and you will play like a figure, a fill or something that just does not allow the band to come off the...
Well, I learned that in Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bass player, Michael Rhodes. He passed away, I think, last year.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, he played the ball.
Oh, he's terrific.
Played on a million records.
Yeah, he's great, man.
Yeah, he taught me a lot.
Pat McLaughlin.
Oh, yeah. I used to play in that band with him, yeah. And, and he just taught me, like, you know, how to, you know, he said, "You play with the click well." He goes, when you do a drum fill, just be in command of it and show us where, you show us and lead us where,
Need to come out.
Yeah, this downbeat comes because says, "Your track is the first one that matters." And he goes, "We're following you." So,
man.
And, you know, he told me, he goes, "Look, man, I've worked with a million session drummers that played on thousands of records that still, you know, could rush or drag feels or whatever." But he goes, you know, it's like, but he just told me, he says, "Yeah, just take command of it, man." He goes, "We need somebody in Nashville to, you know, of course, the scene has changed there, but."
Right.
But he taught me how to just, like, say what you mean what you say, and just, you know, serve the song, if you will.
Right. Yeah, and you do that so great, you know, like a Matt Tech, you know,
yeah.
The guy, it's like...
And it, you know what it is, too? It comes with age, man. It's like, I mean, Anders Osborne, probably one of my biggest teachers of, like, telling me in a subtle way of how to... play songs, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I can't still can't believe to this day that Anders actually let me stay in his band for 3 years without shooting me in the head or firing me.
He had problems with you?
No, he just like, I was one of those drummers that just overplayed and rushed and at the time, and I could play with the click and stuff, but like when we were like play live and You can tell he was just
over exuberant.
And I got him when he was sober. So I was like, but he was like, he was really nice about it. And when we go eat dinner, he'll in a subtle way talk about, yeah, I was in Nashville the other day, man. I did this great session with Chad Cromwell, and he goes, man, you got to check out Chad, man. He comes when he plays and he does this going into the bridge, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And he'd tell me about it. And all what he's doing is telling me
what
I should
be. What he wants you to do, right?
And it took me a couple minutes. I mean, it took me a couple months to realize, like, you know, he was just being a big brother, you know, and just nice. Like, and not being an asshole about it. And,
right.
And, yeah. You know,
so. Man, that's priceless. Now, you are obviously a funny guy, not to put that on you, but, you know, you're a guy who's very entertaining to other musicians. You're a good storyteller. Now, I think I might have referenced this story on the podcast already, but I heard it from you, and it was concerned like you ran into Chick Corea. You were talking to Chick Corea, and you're like, Chick, you ever have a bad gig?
Oh yeah.
You remember the story?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead, tell us that.
Yeah, I was traveling with Mim Shannon, and we were on a month tour of Europe, and we flew back, got into Newark, and we had a 4-hour layover because of the weather or something. So before we can get back to New Orleans, so I'm like just kind of half sleeping, walking through the Newark airport, and I see Chick Corea and his trio, and they're about to get on a flight, and I'm like, oh shit, that's Chick Corea. And I went to him.
Chick
like,
Corea, famously of you know, played Miles.
Yeah. One of the greatest piano players.
Return
ever.
To Forever. You know, yeah. The Leprechaun. Did you? Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I love that.
I had that record
all
when I was a kid.
And he was about to board a plane, and they're like, you know, they all first class or whatever. And I'm like, hey Chick, how you doing? He's like, oh hey man, he was nice, you know, and I was like, and it was something I always wanted to ask him. I was like, man, you ever have a shitty gig and it just gets in your head and it's like you just can't play anything, and his band is just I think it was like John Patitucci and
right.
Dave Weck or something.
Uh-huh,
and I
sure.
was a big fan of Weck, and Weck like just saw that I was the drum nerd, and he just walked away.
he didn't want you to start talking to him.
Yeah, he just like acting like he was sleeping.
Start asking what kind of stick he
yeah,
uses.
Yeah, yeah. and Chick goes, you know, he goes, there's always. He goes, yeah, we all have those nights. And he goes, he said, the good thing is there's always tomorrow night. You know, he's like, if it sucks tonight, just finish it off. And tomorrow night should be better. If it's not, that next time will be better. And he was right. You know, it's like,
right.
Sometimes you feel off or about, you know, something. And it's like, you know, it could be one little thing can throw a gig off, you know. It's like,
well, I remember you telling me the story. You said, but yeah, you ever have a gig that makes you want to quit playing music? And he said, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, many times. A lot of people, yeah.
He said, maybe he should. He
said, oh man.
And you said, well, what do you do? And you said, just play another one, man.
Yeah, he goes, just play the next gig.
You're bound to, you're
and he was
bound
right,
to
like,
have a good one.
Yeah, he goes, there's a good one coming up somewhere in there.
Which
yeah, it was
which
weird.
Which is a Vidakovich thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying, like, I've talked to many, many different people about, like, people asking me, like, man, if you were to do it all over, would you play the same instrument or this? I was like, I would not be a musician.
Yeah, well.
I just wouldn't. I love it. I don't know, I don't know.
I think
maybe
you
I'm
would.
Just bored.
Yeah, oh, no.
I think my career's over anyway, but I mean, I'm still like.
You're a young man.
I'm just, I'll be 50 next month, so I'm like. Nobody, you know, wants a, you know, a drummer that's, you know, kind of thinning up in the hair.
Seasoned. No, I think everybody wants you, Doug.
No, man. I love watching these young guys in town. They're just ripping it up. And it's like, yeah, I remember when I was doing that.
But
Chick Corea did say that. He's like, he always said, he goes, look, there's always the next gig. You know, it's like, you know, it's not the last night, you know.
Which is kind of a Vidakovich thing, because Vidakovich will often use like baseball as an analogy for music, because he loves baseball. And you say, that's the thing about baseball, is like you play a million games, you know, just,
yeah.
It's like if you lose one today, just play tomorrow, you know?
I remember asking Johnny, I said, man, when you got to take shitty gigs, how do you deal with that? Like those 4-hour shitty gigs where you got to put a tuxedo on or something. He goes, oh, it's like a bee sting. It's gonna hurt for a second, but then he gets over. And it's like, you just get your shit and get out there. And
It's like a bee sting.
Yeah, he said, it's like a bee
don't
sting.
Don't you feel bad for the audience, though, who paid good money and you're doing a shit?
Well, a lot of these songs, a lot of these gigs
he's
were.
He's playing well. I mean, he's playing.
No, but I'm just saying, Korea told them, well, they'll be tomorrow night or whatever.
Oh, well, just because
you're
it's
just like
control.
If you're not on your game, like you feel like, shit. And there's always. It could be the piano wasn't as good as the one next
and
night.
Look, in a lot of cases.
Could be the sound.
In a lot of cases, if you talk to the audience, they'd say, that's the best I've ever heard that band sound.
I'm
sure you've
yeah.
experienced that where you go, that's my worst gig I've ever played with this band. And then you talk to somebody.
That was a gig for the School of the Deaf.
And they say that. Yeah. They say that because here's the interesting thing about playing is our perspective as people on stage, you know, is important to us and it's important to the process, but it's not the most important thing. What's the most important thing is the experience of
the money
of the listener. and oftentimes, and I've witnessed this as a listener, and so I can understand it. Like a lot of times when musicians are uncomfortable, it can be very compelling as an audience member.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, they could see it.
So just,
and I look pretty boring when I play.
So just because this may not be your favorite gig, don't give up on it. And that's another thing. It's like, don't ever say, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to blow the rest of this gig because it's already shit. Because, you know, that's in your head, and you don't know how other people are experiencing this. And again, you don't have the best perspective. I mean, you have the best perspective to judge your own sense of things, but that's, you know, it's really about the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so then also, you know, you are a great mimic. You're a great impressionist of musicians, and you have jumping topics now, and that you have an impression on almost every musician in town, particularly drummers.
I'll try to some of them, you know. Some of them.
Many of them.
And then
are.
You have to be behind a drum set to show it, you know.
Right, right.
When I'm in a session or a gig, if I can make musicians feel comfortable and make them laugh to make all of us want to be there, you know, it's like, if you laugh at my shit, it makes me happy. I'm happy to be there. And if they laugh, like, there's this bass player in town, I won't name his name, not you, but
right.
like, he can come to a gig pissed off, but after about 5 minutes of us starting, I'll do my thing, and and then he's smiling after that, and it's all good, and the band leader turn like, thank you.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in therapy?
He's been doing therapy. He's been administering therapy. He's a therapist.
We're all giving each other, you know, therapy lessons.
That's true. Well, you know, my best friend Glenn Styler, Brent Newman, would say, you know, psychiatrist for people that don't have real friends.
I go to Manny for my therapy.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
And you owe me $80, man.
Again.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to get it from him either. I think he's looking.
None of these drummers pay.
Looking for an exit.
Yeah.
Well, another one of those sets of stories you were telling one time at a session you and I were on with the great Ben Elman. Remember that session we were doing out at Goat Studio?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And you were telling stories about harassing a music store in town, like lightly harassing them, and that you would call up and you would put on phony voices.
Oh, I do that to Ray Franson.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That was Ray Franson.
Right.
No, I called Ray the other day. Like, I always call, I would call, and if Ray answers, or Frank, but anytime Ray answers, I always fuck with him. You know, I was like, I always like, he'll be like, hello, Ray Franson Drum Center. I was like, yeah, hi. Do y'all have the Stantmore drum throne? And he's like, we have drum thrones, but there's no Stantmore. No, there's no signature. Yeah, I'm looking for the Stantmore signature drum throne. And he's like, well, no, he doesn't have it. He has a signature snare drum and cymbals, but he doesn't have a drum. I said, yeah, it's a Gretsch drum throne. He goes, no, he doesn't have a drum throne. And he starts like kind of losing his. He's like, he doesn't have his own drum throne. He just uses a regular drum throne. He does. I was like, no, I'm looking for the Stantmore drum throne. And he's like, he doesn't have a drum throne. I was like, oh, he stands up to play? Yeah, I'll just make up stuff. And
I love that the character has a lisp.
Or like I'll just make it. And like I called the other day during the eclipse, and I was like, he answers. I'm like,
yeah, do y'all have some Eclipse drum deals today? And she's like, what? No. Well, why would we do that? I was looking for a cymbal.
And these guys are that bright.
Yeah, but I always use different voices. And
but they don't know whether to just
like I would
call you right back and say, stop fucking calling me. We know who you are.
Oh, Ray gets pissed when he knows me. He's like, God damn it, dog.
It's like the two bar tapes, you know? It's like the guy's calling Red, you know, I know who you are.
Yeah, right.
I'll cut you open and show you all the black stuff.
Ray, I'll just mess with him all the time, like, well, I'll just call in. It may be any voice. It could be.
The other bit you were telling me at that same session was about that Ray carries the BAP drum straps.
Oh yeah.
So talk about the BLAP. Yeah. Talk about the BLAP drums. What that is.
Yeah. The schools that march in the parades here, there's these small like floor toms. They wear tenor drums. But they wear them like bass drums.
Right, right. Have heads on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. And they're like high pitched, but they call them BLAP, BLAP, like BLAP drums. And I would always Ray would sell a million of those from Mardi Gras.
So they have the straps.
Yeah, they have a strap.
Straps wear out, right?
Yeah, nobody wears like harnesses. It's a harness, but it's like they like the old school straps.
It's like nylon or something.
Yeah.
Woven
and
nylon.
And they break and stuff. They wear out. And I always. And a while back, he was like mad because they sold out and people kept calling for him. He's like, and he's pissed off because the company I was supposed to send him, it's like almost Mardi Gras on like, 4 days coming up. And he's like, I can't believe I didn't get these damn straps yet. I'm pissed off. And so I'd call in, I'd leave the store and I'd call and go,
yeah, I was calling about a strap for that blab drum.
He goes, oh, they're not in yet. And he's like, I could see him, he's pissed off. I said, well, y'all told me y'all was going to have them. I would just mess with him, and I'd call like. Sometimes I'd just call and like say, "Yeah, hi. My name is Timmy. I'm from Kentucky. I'm a country drummer. I just moved to New Orleans here, and y'all have any country and western drumsticks over there?" He's like, "Well, I mean, we got every kind you need. What do you need? Yeah, I want some country and western. I want to get that Brad Paisley sound." And it just pissed him off, man. He just like you could see he's looking at Frank going, "Oh."
Like, now the
you gotta give me these guys' phone number.
You wanna get into the act?
I should be recording all this when I do this.
You should.
Phony phone calls. Now the blap. See, because you forget the bits. I remember the bit better than you do.
Yeah.
The blap drum bit with the one you told me is that you're calling him up and you're saying, "Well, because I want one of these straps to hang my baby in a parade."
I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah." The straps weren't in, but he goes, what size drum you have? Because I might have a different strap in the back that he's trying to sell. He's like,
I said, no, I'm just trying to hang my baby. I just got a 3-year-old baby, and I'm just trying to. I mean, 3-month-old baby, and I don't want to put in a car seat,
or I want to try to. I forgot what it was. Like I was trying to
strap connect it to the front of me, right?
Yeah, strap it. I want to strap the baby from the from one of those harness collars for the dogs or something. He's like, why would you want to do that? I can't say that. It's whatever comes up on top of my head. As soon as he answers the phone, I just start making stuff up. It's
fucking hilarious, man. I remember one of my favorite lines. He said, "Oh, I don't. You can't do that." And you said, "How do you know?"
Yeah. I called once. I said, "Yeah, do y'all have Zildjian cymbals?" And he goes, "We don't have that many."
He shot back at you.
I did that when I first got the Anders Osborne gig. I did that to Anders jokingly because it was before cell phones, and he called me for a gig. I'd never played with him, and I called him and I called him back and he answers the phone and goes, "Hello." I said, "Yeah, hi Anders. This is Cecil." And he goes, "Hi Cecil. How can I help you?"
"You don't remember me? My name is Cecil. We had fun."
He's like, what did we do?" I said, "Oh my God, you don't remember?" I was just messing with him. And I had him going for like 5 minutes. And finally, he's like, "Oh, fuck." And he goes, by this time he's sober. And he's like, "Oh, shit. Did we do anything?" I was like, "Oh my God, you don't remember?"
It's
like,
"Oh, brother."
And his heartbeat was fast. He's like, "Oh my God." And then finally I said, "Hey, it's Doug." Doug, he goes, "Oh my God, thank God. Oh my God." He goes, but he always tells that story.
Might have had some compromising photos that he doesn't recall. It's possible.
But that was before, cell phones. So I said, "Damn, you don't have a call ID, man?"
Right, right. Man, that's funny. Well, Doug, man, so great having you on. So, you finally the movie is completed, and it's you have a screening coming up.
Yeah, I got a screening coming up. It's called Drumming Below Sea Level, Street Beat Drumming Below Sea Level, and so it should be on. Eventually, once we screen it, we have to just go through a little more process of getting the rights to some songs, which we're doing now, and
right.
videos, and then. Donnie is talking with the attorney about what avenue to go to either stream it or sell it or whatever, you know.
Right, so, right.
And then once that happens, everybody will know, you know.
Man, well, that's a terrific product. It's something that will live forever. You know, like some of these things you see, like the piano players rarely play together. These documentaries that are made, you know, with Alan and Toots and Fess. And as the time goes on, you're like, they're appreciated more and more and more because... this is a repository of our culture here, and that's what you've done here.
Yeah, just trying to get the idiom out and show the world of, you know, because stuff, everything's changing, the styles of drumming, the younger people coming up and changing stuff, and which is good. And I just want to keep this style with these people, and I handpicked these people. You know, it's like there's older people like Freddie Staley and Johnny and Zigaboo, and I got young people like Jason Adonis and Gerald French. You know, it's like,
right.
So I have, you know, old, young, white, black.
Yeah.
I got Leslie Smith talking there. She was, ever since she was a teenager, she was singing with Johnny Vidakovic, James Black, and Herman Ernest. And
yeah, well, I would see her at
Tyler's. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, with that band. I figured, oh, this girl is much older than me. She's like 4 years older than me or something.
Yeah, she's not older. Yeah, right. Yeah, she's but she knew.
She grew up in that milieu. Her father was Michael Smith, Michael P. Smith, right?
Right.
Great photographer.
Yeah, great photographer. I used to go to her house. She goes, can you come see some of these old Jazz Fest photos? Who's this guy with the headdress on? I said, that's Daniel Lanois. Okay, who's this little young teenage drummer? That's Brian Blade.
Yeah.
Oh, who's this? That's Nicholas Payton.
Oh, my God, Daniel Lanois. He's not playing again, is he?
Well, he's playing somewhere, but not at any of the festivals coming on. Not
one of the worst performances I've ever seen in my life.
I saw the same one. I liked it. But
the one at Jazz Fest?
Yeah.
Just awful.
Yeah, again, you know, Manny has his taste. We all are entitled to our own opinion.
So if Daniel Lanois and Bob Dylan had a...
commonality. Yeah.
I mean, if they had a tour together, would you go?
No.
Not even free tickets.
Not even free tickets. No, I wouldn't go. No, I would not go.
Okay. No. I think we've arrived at something tonight.
Yeah.
Well, Doug, thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure to be with you and such a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you and Manny for having me again.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for being here. This show reminded me of that time when I tried to take a shit with an erection.
Okay.
You ever try doing that?
No.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
And this show reminded me of that.
Okay.
So anyway, the trouble
is a great show.
Yeah. It's unique.
People are hard for the show.
Unique experience.
Hard for the show.
Can't not be hard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, as always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But it always continues.
The struggle continues.
Yes, exactly. Good night.
Good night.
I don't wanna live my life inside. I don't wanna live my life inside of shell. Just so hard, just think about it. I don't wanna live my life inside. I don't wanna live my life in front of a screen. It's just so hard. One day you're gonna realize up means down. One day you're gonna realize, and I won't be coming round, be coming round, round, round. I don't wanna live my life in front of a screen. I don't wanna live my life. So hard. I just wanna live my life outside. I just wanna feel the sun shining down on my skin. The
sun shining down on my skin. It feels so good.